The group began practicing in a place called Venice in Los Angeles. It's a beach town with the atmosphere of a dying arcade. And then our first job was a Christmas party at a house from a relative of Robbie's. Then our first job was at the London Fog on Sunset Strip. It was a small club that no longer exists. The most people it could hold, I'd say, would be about 50.
Unhappy with the outcome of the World Pacific Session, Richard and James Manserek quit Rick and the Ravens. The remaining three renamed themselves The Doors, after Jim Morrison records some lines by William Blake in Aldous Huxley's The Doors of Perception. For a while, they wondered whether to carry on as a trio before auditioning a succession of different instrumentalists. Of these, the most promising was 19-year-old Bobby Krieger, who had studied classical guitar before investing in an electric model to join John Densmore in the Psychedelic Rangers. With Bobby combining rhythm and lead guitar, and Ray pumping bass notes on his organ's foot pedals, the Doors landed a brief residency at one of the Rangers' old haunts, the London Fog, followed by a season at the 300-capacity Whiskey A Go-Go, also along Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, now the storm center of the US music business. Their efforts were rewarded with less screaming delirium than the considered ovations that typified Hollywood cool. Nevertheless, it was at this citadel of hip that the Doors felt themselves home and dry, as involved onlookers flocked towards the stage during, say, an especially bravura version of Howling Wolf's Backdoor Man, or when Jim took it down easy for the lengthy spoken interlude in the end and piled up the tension to explosive panic, bringing the house down. They faced stiff competition when supporting then bigger names such as Love, The Association, Count Five, The Birds, Them, and Captain Beefheart. If not yet as tirelessly self-glorifying as he was to become, Jim Morrison saw to it that he was noticed nattering with the headliners, even mounting the boards on one occasion to sing a rambling duet of In the Midnight Hour with Van Morrison, vocalist with Them. Jim's behaviour had prompted reprimands from the management of both the London Fog and the Whiskey. To prepare himself for each night's performance, he'd drink quantities of alcohol, often knocking back more than he should. The main bone of contention, however, was the end, now lasting for up to 20 minutes. It was also becoming more and more freighted with apocalyptic imagery, incitements to patricide, and worse, as Morrison's morbid improvisational flights and overtly sexual vocal theatrics prodded harder on the nerve of how far he could go. Like the London Fog before it, the Whiskey was to fire the Doors without notice. Nevertheless, the growing reputation as the band boys of local pop had caused even the most slow-witted record company talent scouts to check them out. Most left their Scotch and Cokes half drunk after eliminating the Doors from their running lists of, if not the new Beatles, then at least a new Beatles. CBS, however, was willing to grant the Doors a recording test. As they weren't obvious no-hopers, a contract was signed, but the company got cold feet and allowed its option to expire. This was regrettable, but not disastrous, because Arthur Lee, leader of Love, had recommended the Doors to Jack Holtzman, founder in 1950 of Elektra Records, an independent label catering for the acoustic blues and folk markets via albums by the likes of Josh White, Judy Collins, and Tom Paxton. Lately, however, it had not so much dipped a toe as plunged headfirst into electric rock by latching onto acts such as Love, Clear Light, and Earth Opera. Merging into the shadows at the Whiskey, Holtzman attended four of the Doors' sweat baths before he tuned into their hybrid of arty sophistication and epic vulgarity. When over the initial shock, he'd also been surprised by the fact that they hadn't needed a bass guitarist to go down well in a small club. Yet lacking this fourth part of the usual rock group's lineup, would a television audience think there was a bit missing from their music too? He was, however, astute enough to appreciate what a find Arthur Lee had made. Therefore, thrusting any misgivings aside, Jack Holtzman struggled through the crowd afterwards to suggest a formal meeting with Messrs. Densmore, Krieger, Manserek, and Morrison.